I'm Hope Duggar.
Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Odds Couple. This show is about sports betting. My name is Scott Pritchard, a professional sports bettor handicapper, joined as always by Brett Grant.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
How am I? I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Looking sharp today.
I'm feeling sharp. You kind of look like Barney today.
Oh, you had a purple shirt on yesterday.
Well,
mine's a stylish purple shirt. It's a golf shirt.
What are you saying? Mine was not?
It was. No, I didn't say it wasn't. I said, you're looking stylish, and you told me I look like Barney. I started the day off nice and immediately took a shot.
Didn't take long.
No.
Let's get started with what say you, NBA playoffs in full swing. Last night, the Memphis Grizzlies answered at home. They've won two consecutive games now. They were down 17 points. Came on to win the game in overtime. Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Defensive Player of the Year, answered and did extremely well. 3-1. This series is over. What say you?
Well, I have a nice little future bet on this series, you know, with the Grizzlies, thinking because of the injury to Russell Westbrook, it was a good spot to be on the Grizzlies against the Thunder. But, again, a great comeback by the Thunder. And then Kevin Durant just kind of lost. I think he lost his legs towards the end of the game. I think he was 1 of 9 in his last 9 shots, including he missed a layup at the end of the game, which ironically was the difference in the spread, which was a 5-point spread, right?
Yes.
With the Thunder getting 5.
Yes.
Durant had a layup to end the game, missed it, and the Grizzlies win the game by 6 points. The game had already been decided. But a game that the Thunder probably should have won. Again, these leads on the road, teams not able to hang on to big leads late in ball games.
In the NBA, a 17-point lead, it's really not as big as you might think. You're talking 6, 7, 8 baskets. It really depends if it's early in the second quarter, late in the fourth quarter. Unless you're playing the Golden State Warriors, then no lead is safe. The Denver Nuggets proved that when they overcame an 18-point deficit in the last 5 minutes to have an opportunity to tie with 11 seconds to go. And the Spurs, the very next game in Game 1, down 16 points to Golden State, 4 minutes to go, came back, forced overtime, ultimately won the game. This time of year, I've said it a million times, I like teams that are proven, teams that know how to win. And as much as I like teams like the Golden State Warriors, they're not proven. They lack experience. They're very young. They're going to be very good. At this point, teams like the Warriors have overachieved. But I want to get back to the Grizzlies. The fact that you have a future on them. Did you bet them to win the West? Did you bet them to win the finals? Or did you bet them to simply win the series?
This series. Just this series.
And when did you make that bet? Was it before it started?
Yeah, I did.
What was the number?
I want to say plus 150, 145. What are those two?
Wow.
Something like that.
That's great because the money opened. Oklahoma City was a small favorite. And then the money came in on the Grizzlies to where they were a small favorite to win.
Unless
and then, of course, they lost. Maybe it was after game one. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Because after game one, obviously the Thunder would be the favorite, but a small favorite. So that number sounds, and you've won every game since. So timing's everything.
Right. I think it was after game one, as I remember. But and I also, you know, in listening to what you're talking about with regards to the Spurs, I tried to create a matchup with the Spurs versus the Heat in the final at plus 250. Thinking that might be a good way to see those two teams get to the finals together. And right now I think I'm in decent shape with that.
Well, the Miami Heat, as we've said for months, no team in the East has any shot. And overall, I just don't think with the home court advantage, any team, West, East, Middle East, doesn't matter. No team is going to beat the Heat 4 times in a 7-game series, barring a major injury.
You don't think the Iraqis have a chance from the Middle East?
I don't. I've seen their funky terrorist attack training right with the monkey bars. I'm unimpressed.
There's a couple of Syrians that can really get up and down the floor. I'm not sure how that works for you. You know, the Grizzlies obviously very balanced attack last night. It was interesting where they went with the ball to end regulation to Zach Randolph and not let Conley get into the lane and kick and penetrate. They set up a play for Randolph, which I didn't really like that play. I don't know how you felt about it.
I'm a big Zach Randolph fan. I mean, the guy is a star when it comes to fighting for positioning and grabbing countless offensive rebounds. Anytime you can go into the post, I love teams that go inside out like the Spurs, like the Grizzlies, as opposed to outside in. As much love and respect as I have for Michael Conley, he's one of the top five guards in all of basketball. I actually agree with going into Zach Randolph and letting him either work it one-on-one, if he's double-teamed, kick it out to a guard a la Conley. So I don't think that's a bad call at all.
Well, I would have liked him to go into the lane, Conley go into the lane, and then find one of those guys or have them attack the glass or find Gasol for an open jumper. And because he got the ball to Randolph, and you knew that he was going to be taking that shot. And he just never was open, never got a good shot. And, in fact, it got blocked going in. But, in overtime, they dominated the overtime period.
You know, I talk about this. Well, Derek Fisher, okay? I've been throwing this guy under the bus for quite some time. And he's been making me look bad because, for all intent and purpose, he's had a pretty good series. But last night, not so much.
Not so good.
He, again, is a tremendous liability on defense. The one thing he can do, two things really, make free throws, but don't foul him. He's a three-point shooter. Right. Guys like him are a dime a dozen. He's a spot-up, set shot, three-point shooter. He's way past it. And last night, I believe it was 1-for-5 shooting, 1-for-4 from the three-point line. But, you know, it was a three-point game with about 12 seconds to go, and he made the biggest bonehead play of the game by simply throwing it right to the wrong team. I mean, it was a good pass, but he was colorblind. It went to the wrong team.
The guy was open.
He was wide open.
Should he get credit for that? You know, did you realize that last night?
I thought I was watching Vinny Testaverde.
Against Penn State.
Right, against anybody.
That's pretty true. Remember that national championship game?
I do.
Every time
Early
he dropped
80s.
Back to pass. That was, let me think, because that was the year I blew up my knee in Squaw Valley on a ski trip during Christmas. So that was
82, 83?
No, it's later, 85, 86.
Okay.
I want to say about 1985, because I was either a freshman or a sophomore in college.
85, so, 86, because, I mean, 86 was...
It was probably January of 1986. It was a Fiesta Bowl, right?
Yeah, but Bo Jackson versus Chuck Long for the Heisman Trophy, very, very close. Bo Jackson won, but I believe that was in 86.
So Vinny
Testaverde would have been before, yes.
So, the game would have been January of 1986.
Right.
So, the end of that season.
Do you have the specific day?
Did he throw five
in January?
By January 1st or January 2nd, wasn't it?
That would make sense.
Something. It might have been.
You've got a 31-1 shot, but my guess is it would be the 1st or 2nd.
I think we're on a tangent. But
that's never happened
before. Did you realize that Derek Fisher tied the record for most postseason games played in the history of the league last night?
Well,
tied now with Robert Horry. So my initial thought was that, I started laughing because I said Derek Fisher, and I thought of you immediately, and I just started laughing. But obviously it goes to show that those two guys have been the great beneficiaries of being a part of terrific playoff teams and terrific basketball teams with the Lakers and other teams. Not that they were ever the stars, but they were a part of teams with Shaq and Kobe that carried them to titles. And because their careers have been longer than those guys, they've now played the most games ever.
Huge difference between, say, Derek Fisher and Big Shot Rob. Robert Horry was the real deal. He stepped up, made countless game-winning shots when it really mattered.
And he did it with Houston. He did it with the Lakers.
He absolutely did.
Did it with the Spurs.
Winning championships with the Houston Rockets, the Los Angeles Lakers, time and time again. I remember Derek Fisher making one huge basket. I believe it was against my San Antonio Spurs in 2002. Off balance, he closed his eyes, threw it up, it went in, they won the game. But other than that, you may or may not know, I'm not a big Derek Fisher fan.
I think I know that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Are you sure he had his eyes closed?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. How else would it go in?
Exactly.
I mean, he was basically on his back. The shot was contested. Great defense, nothing you can do there. But Robert Horry, on the other hand, I mean, time and time again, I mean, the guy had the height. It wasn't all about Big Shot Rob. It was all about his teammates. Where Derek Fisher, it's all about me.
That's
I want to talk about me. Enough about me. What do you think about me?
That's a good point. Well, he was part of those Spurs teams as well, wasn't he? Ori on those teams as well when the Spurs were winning some titles?
I don't think so.
No? None of them?
No, I remember him playing.
With the Rockets, I agree. And the
Lakers, remember the Lakers and the Rockets hurting my Spurs.
Right.
And like Daryl Wright, one of our guests yesterday, he prefaced everything that he said by saying, I'm a Spurs fan. It's like, okay, we heard that 8 times. We get it. We get it. You're a Spurs fan. And then he'd throw him under the bus.
Right. We do have to give him credit because your play yesterday which I know we'll talk about later, you gave out the under in the Bulls game.
Right.
And he instantly – so that's easiest, basically the easiest bet on the planet. And it ended up being a 30-point winner for you. And we know that they're never that easy. They're only that easy when they go against you.
No doubt.
When you lose by 30 points.
Well, here's the thing. You know you have a good bet if you win the total by 30. But I wanted to expand on that because Daryl, great guy, sports enthusiast. He's a NASCAR dude. Hard to take him seriously. I mean, he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, but I loved his logic. He had really thought about why he was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan. I love the guy. He's an outstanding headline comedian, one of two comics on the planet on George Carlin's label. But I do want to address what he had said because the point spread, whether it's the side or the total, is there to present a 50-50 proposition. Sportsbooks, they've built these mega resort hotel casinos betting that you cannot hit 52.4%, which is the break-even point. What makes you think that you can hit 50%? The idea is, I've said this many times, having done this for the past 30 years, there is no such thing as a lock. Locks are for doors. There is no such thing as a sucker play, especially if you think you are sticking it to the casino, because on your best day, as sharp as you can be, getting a half point and a half, the best of it, on your best day, you're going to hit 60%, which, again, long-term, you're crushing, you're killing. So with all due respect to my good buddy Daryl Wright, for him to say, that's too easy. I mean, when I hear that in the sports book, it's like, wow, maybe I better evaluate my bet, because if a layman is thinking that it's a lock, I don't want to be on Joe Public's side. But in this case, obviously, I must have knew something, and it won by 30. If only they all could be this easy.
Right. Back to Robert Horry real quick. He won 7 NBA titles. His last was as a member of the San Antonio Spurs.
One time.
He played for the Rockets. He played for the Lakers. He spent 5 years in San Antonio with them in the playoffs with stuff. But
remember him winning championships with the Spurs, but he did win probably in 2007.
Yep. He was on that team in 2007. Didn't play a lot that particular year. That was towards the end of his career, but he was a member of that team. But he averaged... what did he average? A couple of points in the playoffs that year.
Well, again, just his leadership.
4 points a game in the postseason.
His leadership and the fact that he was proven, unlike Derek Fisher, who just basically rode the coattails of Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaquille O'Neal, and some guy named Kobe.
Right. Well, and that's where, you know, you look at these things. I mean, you realize there's only 9 players who've won 7 NBA titles or more. Robert Horry is one of those guys. You might go a long time to figure out all those guys, and if you didn't know a lot about the game, you'd say, okay, Wilt and, you know, Bill Russell and all those guys and Magic, and well, you might go a long time before you got to Robert Horry.
Well, it's true, and again, in the world of professional sports, a lot of people have a lot of respect for Big Shot Robert Horry, because again, he made it about his teammates, and he stepped up and hit those big-time shots when the game was flat out on the line. You know, we talked yesterday about the Defensive Player of the Year, Marc Gasol. Well, I was talking to Daryl. I thought it was entertaining because I said, wow, let the coaches decide who the player defensively of the year is instead of the media. What does the media know? Right. And they made Marc Gasol the Defensive Player of the Year, and yet last night they announced the first team, all defense. Marc Gasol not on the team.
Oops.
How about that? And even last year, the dude, Chandler,
right,
same thing happened. Defensive Player of the Year, but did not make first team. So it was funny last night, Zach Randolph, after the game, Tony Allen I love. I think he's probably the inspirational leader for the Memphis Grizzlies because he brings it each and every night. He would make a great Chicago Bull, Indiana Pacer, because he has a lot of heart. Used to play for the Celtics, now plays for the Grizzlies. I love this guy, and he made first team all defense, and so they call him first team, which is quite an accomplishment. You have roughly about 330 NBA players, so it's at the highest level. 7 billion people on the planet, only 330 men play professional basketball, and here this guy makes the first 5 on the all defensive team. The biggest joke in professional sports, 6th man award. who cares? You're not good enough to be in the starting five. You have, what, 30 teams. So you're basically the 151st best player in the league, and we're going to give you an award and call you out. You're the best sixth man. What does that mean? That's like between you and me saying, well, you're the second best guy on the show, whether it's me or you.
I beg to differ.
I said whether it's you or me.
Oh, there you go. Well, it was just everybody likes to have a ribbon. It's part of the ribbon society now. No, we can't keep score in these little soccer games with eight-year-olds playing because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So let's give an award to somebody. Let's call this guy our most improved player, right? Let's call this guy the best defensive guy. Everybody's got to get an award. Why can't we just say, and we still talk about the MVP. Is he the best player in the league, no matter what team he's on, or is he the best player for his team, given a spot? You know, you think about baseball. We had this argument in baseball for years and years. Andre Dawson wins the MVP on a last-place team with the Cubs. He deserved it. He was the best player
49 home runs
in the
year,
league,
I believe, yeah.
That year. And then you have other guys who go out and win an award, and you're saying, okay, well, Barry Larkin won an MVP one year, and you're going, boy, his numbers weren't even close to the numbers that Dante Bichette put up that year in Colorado. And I say, well, Bichette played in Colorado, and they weren't very good, and he hit him in the rarefied air. Well, if it was good enough for Andre Dawson to play for the Cubs, this guy's numbers dwarf the numbers of Barry Larkin. But Larkin was the inspirational leader of the Reds. That I think it was 1990 probably when he won it. And you're saying, well, make up your mind. Which way is it? Are we going to talk about the best player on a team that makes the team win a championship? Or is it the best player in the league no matter what team they play for?
Well, even yesterday we were talking about let the players decide, because I'm pretty sure Tim Duncan would be the man. And, of course, he made the all-defensive team. I mean, Tim Duncan is the man. I mean, you look at those awards. I mean, Phil Jackson, I don't think he ever was the coach of the year, but he won not one, not five.
He won once. He won once.
Coach of the year
one time.
He
and George Karl had the same.
But think about that. Right, exactly. George Karl, he's been to the NBA Finals one time in 30 years, and Phil Jackson has won not one, not five, but 10. There's only one number one. He's won it 10 times. I do want to back up for a second, but coach of the year only one time. You talk about in today's world, wasn't like that when I was a kid, or you. Everyone, there are no losers. Everyone gets a ribbon.
Right.
Everyone gets to play. Well, for me, growing up on the farm in Iowa, I could not make the Little League baseball team. So my dad started a team. His name was Raymond. He called the team Ray's Rascals. My question is, how bad of a baseball player at age 8 do you have to be that your dad starts a team because you can't make the Little League team? And I still couldn't get any time.
Dad still wouldn't put you on the field.
No.
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
Scott, I've seen you play.
But there's a point there. Okay, baseball was not my gift. Okay, I'm still searching for what my strength might be.
Right.
But I learned at age 8, okay, I might want to go in another direction. He thought maybe I should consider dance.
Well, I had a coach growing up who used to yell at me. He said, Grant, you're so slow, you run like your mother. And my mother would say, hey, I'm right here. I'm not that slow. You know, get the piano off your back, that kind of stuff. But you're right. It's all about everybody's got to have a chance to – it's one thing to have the opportunity to play. But, you know, I coached a lot of Little League baseball and club baseball and had a great time with that. And you always had kids – whose parents thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread. And my kid's the shortstop. My kid has to play shortstop. Well, every parent feels their kid is the shortstop, except for mine. My kid was left-handed. I said, well, I know he's not playing shortstop. But it's like, well, you can't – guess what? They only allow us to have one shortstop. I need a center fielder. I need a right fielder. I need a second baseman. I need guys at other spots. So we're going to move your guys around. Don't get married to a spot, because guess what? That kid on my team who had to be the shortstop, he's in high school now, he's not playing shortstop. He's playing a different position. And I kept trying to tell people that you're not going to be a shortstop necessarily in high school. You're going to maybe be a second baseman or a third baseman. Learn all those positions, because the more versatile you are, the more opportunities you're going to have to play, because your coach will say, hey, that guy can play in the outfield. That guy can pitch. That guy can do this. He can do that, as opposed to pigeonholing yourself into one spot in a lineup.
Very good point. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. We're live worldwide, compliments of Vegas Video Network. We're simulcast on these two outstanding stations, 10 a. to 11 a. Las Vegas time, Monday through Friday. I'm with Brett Grant. My name, Scott Pritchard, professional sports bettor handicapper. Check me out on my site, PritchardsPicks.com. That's right, I'm featured all over my own website, PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com. We have about a million views per day. Tim Donaghy, former NBA official, has a site, sports betting informational site. I'm on there as well. That's RefPicks.com. Tomorrow we have a special guest, my good friend Eva Futch, who is the widow of the late great Eddie Futch, a longtime legendary Hall of Fame boxing trainer who passed away at the age of 89. Anyone who knows his widow, you will fall in love with this lady. She's very pretty. She's very petite. She's just a very nice person.
Well, it'll be fun. Get a chance to talk to her. And boxing, what's your take on boxing today? Is MMA destroyed boxing, or is it just in a lull? Because I'm not too excited. I mean, I grew up loving boxing, but I'm not into it today. Maybe because I don't like Floyd Mayweather very much. I think he's a punk, and I don't like him, and I'm not going to participate in his fights. But I think the game itself is not nearly the level it was previously.
Well, Al Bernstein is a friend of mine. He is the ESPN boxing expert, and I will have Al Bernstein on our show as well. Now, when it comes to boxing, I don't bet it. My good friend Lem Banker, the legendary icon professional sports bettor who's 86 years old, has been betting sports professionally since 1958. Well documented, he went on to make millions of dollars after coming to this town broke in 1958. He loves betting boxing. In fact, his biggest bets in the past have been on boxing years ago, betting on Larry Holmes to win a heavyweight fight. Easy winner, winner, chicken dinner. He was a pallbearer, Sonny Liston's funeral, so they were very good friends. I do not bet boxing. I do not bet horse racing. I do not bet NASCAR. So it's one of those things that Dink, my good buddy, professional sports bettor for the past 40 years, talks about. He bets hockey professionally, and then he talks to people like myself as far as different sports. He has no ego. He doesn't feel he has to be an expert on multiple sports, multiple subjects. So I'm smart enough to know that I don't know much when it comes to handicapping, boxing, horse racing, NASCAR. I do not, have not, will not bet on those sports.
Well, Eddie Futch, just so people know, if you maybe do remember, he was Joe Frazier's trainer, and the thriller in Manila and that great fight of the century with Muhammad Ali, Eddie was in the corner with Joe Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
Right on.
But that's where he was. It was fun. I remember when I first came to Las Vegas, when I first moved here, one of the very first wagers I made was on Evander Holyfield to beat Mike Tyson. And at 15-1, and he won that fight. And watching that fight in person, but you're right. It was, you know, I think the sport now is missing, especially the heavyweight division. That's the biggest thing to me. The heavyweight division is not where it was since a guy like Mike Tyson disappeared.
I don't bet boxing, but I'm aware of the odds and the numbers. And I remember that fight specifically. First of all, I remember 1989 when Buster Douglas was a 50-1 shot against Mike Tyson. The takeback was plus 40-1, and of course he knocked Tyson out. But the fight you're talking about, Holyfield Tyson, was that when he bit his ear?
It was the very first fight. That was the ear bite, I believe. Yes, I think so.
Because what you had was that fight. Tyson was 25-1. Takeback was 21-1. But all the money came in on Holyfield, and so the fact that you had plus 15-1 was stealing. But again, you could have had plus 21-1 had you moved in a couple of days earlier.
I think that's pretty much what the problem was. I think I walked in the
sports. What was the holdup, man?
Driving across the country with my dog was the holdup. But yeah.
I think everyone has a moving to Las Vegas yes. story. Mine, when I came out in April of 93, I remember, thought I would do some bonding with my mom. So I did the U-Haul thing and going through the Rocky Mountains of Denver in April of 93, she had respectfully said, listen, we should avoid the Rocky Mountains. And I said, no, it makes no sense. The shortest distance between two given points is a straight line. So we will attack our fear and we will attack the mountains. So blizzard, snowstorm in the Rockies. And I had this big monster U-Haul moving all of my belongings. My wife at the time was working radio in Chicago, and she was going to be coming out 2 weeks later. But as I was going up the Rocky Mountains in a blizzard, I had it floored going 15 miles an hour, and she respectfully said, yeah, this is a lot quicker than going around the mountains.
Well, the idea is you either take the northern route or the southern route. We went the southern way on the day after Halloween, so November 1st, and myself and my four brothers and a friend driving two cars and the dog across the country. All I remember is stopping in Albuquerque to get coffee about 10 o'clock at night, stretch your legs, use the restroom, and the dog then devouring 36 leftover chicken wings from Hooters in Amarillo, Texas, and bones and all. Thinking,
so you're blaming it on the dog.
I'm thinking the dog's going to die on the trip because he just ate 3 dozen chicken wings, bones and all. And chicken bones are not good for your intestines, right?
That dog has nothing on me.
I got him here a day later. I took him right to the Rainbow Animal Shelter on Rainbow near, not too far from here, actually, Rainbow in Charleston, and told the doctor what was going on. They took an x-ray, and he said, I think the dog's got a cast iron stomach. There's
bones and all, no problem.
Because the dog is perfectly fine. I go, thank God. Let's go party, guys. We're in Vegas.
Wow. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, simulcast live and worldwide, Vegas Video Network. The studio line is open. We would love to hear from you. You want to talk sports, you have sports betting questions, 702-221-7283. That's 221-7283, area code 702. Miami Heat last night looking good, making a statement against the Chicago Bulls. What say you?
They did look good. That's 7-1 now in the postseason. All 7 wins by double digits. Last night was easy. The Bulls are just decimated. They're not the same basketball team. But the thing about Miami I'm a little concerned about, here's Dwayne Wade. He's obviously hurt as well and not able to contribute at the level that you're going to need Dwayne Wade to be able to win a championship. So is there, in your mind, an opportunity for the Indiana Pacers or Knicks, whoever wins that series, and for the Spurs or whoever comes out of the West to maybe knock off the Heat? Because they're not the same team either without a healthy Dwayne Wade.
I would agree with that assessment. I mean, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and Dwayne Wade, he's part of that big three. But this team now, they are a team. Unlike the previous 2 years, last year they won the NBA title, but they had no bench. They picked up Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, Chris Anderson. I mean, Shane Battier, I like. I mean, he's been a clog and anchor for this team as well. This team is improved, and I'm not convinced, Brett, that a year or two ago that they could survive with Wade not being close to 100%, but this year I think they're okay. The East is weak, and the West, I mean, again, they're a bit banged up with Russell Westbrook being down. You're looking at playing a number 2 San Antonio Spurs team, which, as good as they are, they've been a bit vulnerable, or a number 5 team, Memphis Grizzlies, that have no bench. So, again, I don't care that Dwayne Wade is not 100%. No team is going to beat the Heat 4 times, 7-game series.
You know, there was a great analogy last night. I think it was Chris Mullin who said it after the game. He says, you have a team. There's 3 types of players in the NBA. There's superstars, there's regular players, and there's role players. And you have the Heat superstars playing against role players for the Bulls. He goes, this is the biggest mismatch that he's ever seen when it comes to a series about who's on the floor. Nate Robinson, 0-for-12 last night. No points for the Bulls last night.
Right, trying to do too much because right. We know the guy can play. And we've seen, I love and respect the Chicago Bulls so much. They bring the energy, the effort. They are a well-coached, well-disciplined team. But at the end of the day, my friend, talent generally will win out. So the Bulls, hard work will beat talent when talent doesn't want to work or if talent takes a day off. But to sustain that and to win 4 times in a 7-game series, very, very challenging. We're seeing that now with the Chicago Bulls. Interesting now, the next game, the Miami Heat are favored by 14.5 points. In a playoff game in the second round, that's pretty happy.
It's a big number, but the way things are going right now, it seems to be that they're just pulling away. They're like Secretariat in 1973 as the Bulls just get farther and farther. They played them. They won game one, the Bulls did. They played them tougher in game two, not so tough in game three, horrible in game four, and now you have game five, and you're saying, what do the Bulls have left? They're battered and bruised and black and blue, and at some point you're going to say, we're packing it in. We can't win this series. So what kind of effort? Yeah, you'll see pride and you'll see that early in the first or second quarter, but if they fall behind by 10 points, are you going to see an effort in the second half?
Yes, you will, because we're talking Chicago. They are facing elimination, but they're an eyelash away from being off for the rest of the summer. So obviously this series is over, but I also think the Memphis Grizzlies series is over. And I might be the only guy on the planet to say the San Antonio Spurs series. Don't kid yourself. Don't believe the hype. This series is over, and outside of San Antonio being the better team, having the talent, having won four NBA championships. I realize it's 2-2, but the Spurs are favored by 7 to 7.5 points. We're going to talk about this game as we step it up, bring in the wheel, not Wheel of Fortune. Stakes are much higher than Wheel of Fortune. What do you have? I can't see.
There's a very funny photo that our producer, executive producer Scott Whitty put in. There's a spur. He drew a spur. And also apparently a warrior, but it looks like it looks like a mad mother to me. Look at that. I'm not sure what that is, Scott.
I'll take your word for it. So this is the part of the show where we spin to win. The professional sports bettor, successful sports bettor knows that you bet with your head, never your heart. Check your emotions, check your ego at the door. You must be able to make an argument for either team, okay? And that's what this is, spin to win. I am forced to make an argument for one team. Brett automatically has to make an argument for the other team because the smart sports bettor will bet with their head, not their heart. Who do I have?
You have the Warriors.
Oh, my God. Can I re-spin this? In good faith. All right, Golden State Warriors.
Oh, am I supposed to tell you the truth?
Golden State Warriors plus the points. Here's what we have. I mean, it's 2-2. I mean, they're this close to being up 3-1. It pains me to say that. I have the Spurs at a big fat plus 250, plus 220 to win the Western Conference. I'm looking good. I'm feeling good. But we know from a sports betting standpoint, it's basically a 2.5-3 hour contract, a 2.5-3 hour window of opportunity. There are two kinds of people. Those who knock every opportunity and those who take advantage when opportunity knocks. The Warriors are the latter. They are seizing this opportunity. We saw it when they knocked off the Nuggets, a big fat underdog. They knocked off the Nuggets. Now it's 2-2 against the Spurs. They were a 10-1 dog. A 10-1 dog after losing game one. Today they're still about a 3-1 dog. Okay, so I understand the Spurs are going to win this series, but 7 points is a bit happy. Get on the Warriors plus the points. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Ring up the ringer.
Well, the Spurs, I'm a little concerned about the Spurs. I would have rather switched places with you.
No problem.
Because the Spurs.
Now you tell me.
I want the 7 points. The Spurs haven't won a game in this series by more than 7 points. In fact, they should have lost both their games at home. Wait a minute. I'm defending the Warriors. I better start talking about the Spurs. Hey, Spurs, wake up. You're at home. It's a 3-game series you fought all season to have home court advantage. Now you have it. Game five, the most critical game of a series when it's tied 2-2. If this, whoever wins game five, 85-90% of the time goes on to win the series, so a critical game. The Spurs are healthy. I worry about them after the overtime game and from their legs standpoint, but the best player on the other side is also Gimpy and Steph Curry with the ankle, and whether or not he's 100% will be a big factor in the game. I think the Spurs have really got to come out tonight and defend their home court and come out, and Ginobili and Parker and Duncan have got to be the great trio that they've been. All three of those guys, if they all play well tonight, I think the Spurs can get the job done. It won't be easy because I think the numbers should probably be a little lower based on the way how close these four games have been. Seven's a big number, but you've made me lay it, so I have to do it.
I'm going with what Dink said, as we both were in agreement for game three at Golden State, knowing that the Warriors are not this good and the Spurs are not this bad. The 7 points should be the first half line, and I'll tell you why. Tim Donaghy, a good friend of mine who, again, spent 11 months in prison. He is a felon. He was a former NBA official from 1994 to 2007 because he was on the take, apparently, as far as fixing some NBA games. At least those were the accusations, according to the FBI. I have to say that I've been reading excerpts from Tim Donaghy's book, and it's very interesting to me because he talks about what a close-knit family officials are and they're thinking a lot of times. So I look at this game, and it lends itself to what Tim has talked about based on what's happened in the past with NBA officials. When they err and they make a mistake that's blatant and it may cost a team a game, a la the last game when the Warriors had not one but two blatantly obvious calls go their way that forced an overtime, where the Warriors won 13-3 in overtime, then the officials will go out of their way to make good and try to balance the scale. Take that into consideration, tied in with the fact that the Spurs are hungry, They're healthy. They have the best coach on the planet. Oh, yeah, and they're at home. The Warriors have no shot in this game. The last time I said the Warriors have no shot, I ended up shaving my head. So take it at face value, but I love the Spurs.
Are the officials the same?
No, they always change, but again, it's a close-knit family, and they all watch the same games.
Hey, boys, you owe me one.
Well, and at the end of the day, they all go to their green room, and they watch the video replays. And so they, if I can see it, okay, and my eyes are bad, if I can see that Bogut had his foot on the baseline out of bounds with 16 seconds to go, and they still awarded the ball to Golden State, or after Duncan blocked Barnes' layup, and the ball clearly goes off Barnes' hands. If I can see it, anyone can see it. And it cost, that was 4 points, forced the overtime. Go ahead.
But again, in the game last night, between Oklahoma City and Memphis, the ball late in the game goes off the sideline. They went and reviewed if it went off of Conley or went off of the player from Oklahoma City and determined it went off of Memphis. Why would they not have gone back and looked at that? Did Greg Popovich have to ask for them to review that call?
Popovich did ask, okay.
And
but
there, no?
A lot of San Antonio Spurs fans will say there was a conspiracy because there's no love lost between David Stern,
but they
the commissioner.
But they didn't look at that, did
they? They did not.
Yeah.
No, they did not.
But
because
if
they did, they would
have
overruled it. And the coach was asking. So here's what you have. All the more reason why. I don't expect the game to be close regardless. But if it is, the Spurs will get the benefit of the call. So it doesn't mean they're going to win by 8 to 10 to 20 points, but they're certainly going to win the game.
Let me ask you this. Based on what you're talking about, is the first half wager with the Spurs potentially a good wager tonight?
I don't have an opinion on that. Okay. I'm looking at the end result, which is what the officials would be looking at. And I'm not saying anyone's corrupt here. I'm just saying based on what Tim Donaghy has said, and it's a very interesting read. It's like he says it's the book that David Stern did not want released because he names names. Dick Pivetta, Jamal Crawford, we already know, or not Dick Crawford. What's the guy's name?
Jerry,
Crawford. Crawford, the official. Maybe it's Dan Crawford. I don't know. Mr. Crawford, NBA official.
Chuck, Steve, whatever his name is.
There has been a problem with him and the Spurs since day one. And that's common knowledge. Even I know that. But you want to take a look at who is officiating the game. And it's just like when I do my handicapping for baseball, you have trends based on who the home plate umpire is, based on how many games go under, how many games go over. Some have a very – because the strike zone is subjective. Same way in basketball, you're talking about how it's a game of emotion. It's about humans competing against and playing against other humans. And officials, I'm not sold, but they could be considered human, I guess.
I guess.
I'm not a big fan of officials.
Well, let's see if we can find out who the officials were.
Well, I'll know who the officials are by game time, but I'm sure it's out now.
It is, and let me look because I have.
But Crawford is the one that always – well, David Stern has had a bone to pick with Popovich and the Spurs. No love lost there, but everyone knows that. But it doesn't matter who the officials are tonight because, again, they're all in bed together. You're listening to The Odds Couple. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera broadcast quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, professional sports bettor handicapper featured on PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, Tim Donahue's site, RefPicks.com, joined as always by Brett Grant. We would love for you to reach out to us on the Odds Couple via email, oddscouple@VegasVideoNetwork.com. That's oddscouple@VegasVideoNetwork.com. Also, go to our site through web-based voicemail, right-hand side, red bar, click there. In the middle of the page, hit the green bar, start recording. We would love to hear your voice on our show. We also have live chat. It's up and running. If you do miss us live, no worries. Check us out, Vegas Video Network, YouTube, iTunes, Roku. Studio line is open, 702-221-7283. Scott Pritchard, Brett Grant, great to have you with us. Together, we are the Odds Couple. I've been on fire last 9 days, giving out my top play, the right side, each and every week. 8 winners, 1 loser. Brett, 6-3. Anthony Padilla hasn't lost since, I believe, mid-February. So, again, education, entertainment, and we pick winners, too. But with that comes a lot of hard work, frustration. Are you kidding me?
You actually were 14-6 in the last 2 weeks, 70% the last 2 weeks on the show. But are you kidding me? For me, goes to Game 7.
This never did match, by the way. So.
That's all right.
Is it better?
He's good. Scott's checking our arithmetic.
Actually, I think I'm thinking, where did you go to school for math and algebra? Because if I'm talking 8-1, you're talking 6, that's 14-4.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at what Scott gave me, and the thing was 14-6.
So another. Hey, somebody's do you believe everything up. You read?
You just gave me 16-4, actually.
No. 8-1 and 6-3 is 14-4.
Anthony has 2-0.
Well, Anthony is like 20-1. Anthony's like 20-1.
So it's okay. Oh, he wrote down the wrong number. He got dyslexic. It should be 16-4,
that's
not 14-6.
Okay,
well, live chat's wrong. So it should be 16-4 in the last 2 weeks. So let's make that now 80%.
Well, again, 80% is irrelevant because, again, right. 8-2 is 80%, but I'd rather be 800 and 200. Or actually, I'd rather be 600 and 400, 60%, as opposed to 8. So short sample size, I'm not impressed. 16-4 is 16-4. Congratulations. We are handicapping gods. But again, don't hurt yourself, patting yourself on the back there. But it isn't about win percentages as much as it is about just breaking, doing better than the 52.4% win percentage. Well, because, again, but there are things that you can do to offset the house edge, the house vig, the juice. And you do that by getting the best of it because how many times are these sports books dead on the number or within a half
lot.
point and a half? So the idea is every single time it's close to the closing number, you win. So your win percentage will increase considerably. But there's a difference between 600 winners, 400 losers, 60%, and say 80%, 8-2. I'd rather be 600 and 400 having 200 more winners than losers as opposed to just 6.
Makes a lot of sense. All right, back to are you kidding me? I got to go to we had a couple Game 7s in the National Hockey League last night in an original 6 matchup between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. Original 6 meaning, I know you're not a hockey guy, the original 6 franchises of the National Hockey League. When they get together, there's a storied rivalry that dates back 100-plus years. The Toronto Maple Leafs had a 4-1 lead in the game. They had come back from a 3-1 deficit. They won Game 5 in Boston. They came back and won Game 6 at home. They lead now 4-1 with 13 minutes to go in Game 7 on the road in Boston. What happens? They give up a goal. Then Boston pulls their goalie. With about 2 minutes to go in the game, Boston scores again. And then 20 seconds later, Boston scores again. And they tie the game 4-4. They go into overtime, and Boston scores again to win the game 5-4. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are the Chicago Cubs of the National Hockey League, they just cannot close the deal. So to the Maple Leafs and their following, oh, are you kidding me? Up 4-1. It's like losing. That was like the equivalent of the Buffalo Bills coming back to beat Warren Moon with Frank Reich in the playoff game in Buffalo. That's how big of a 4-1 lead is with 13 minutes to go. It's like being down 35-0 in the NFL.
Was it 35-0 or 35-3?
something like that.
I think you're underestimating their opposition. I was happy because the Bills came back from that 35-3 deficit to win, went to the Super Bowl, Pasadena, California. I was there. Don Beebe hooked me up with Super Bowl tickets. Memorable.
Canelan, Illinois' very own.
Yeah, Don Sugar Beebe. Grove, Illinois. Canelan yeah. High School. Right. Yes. So Don Beebe is the man. Forget Rudy. Rudy is a fraud. Rudy was a one-play walk-on. Are you kidding me? I could do a Rudy thing every week.
Rudy lives in town.
I understand.
Be nice to
I don't care. No, I'm not. Okay. He's a legend in his own mind. I've talked to friends who went to Notre Dame. They say, Rudy who? A one-play walk-on. Come on, Don Beebe. Now, there's a Cinderella story. The first player to win to play for six Super Bowl teams, and his play in 1993, Pasadena, California, the first ESPY awarded by ESPN Radio, awarded to a guy, ESPN
TV.
Yeah. Right. The first player, the first Emmy went to a player, Don Beebe, who played for a team that lost and were down by 35 points in the Super Bowl with 2 minutes to go. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. I was just going to say, is Rudy Who related to Cindy Lou Who? But my joke is long, long by.
Well, timing's so, everything. I didn't give you a chance to speak up
there. I didn't
want
to interrupt you.
All right. Are you kidding me? Titus Young. The camera's looking at me like, who is Titus Young? I'm glad you asked. Titus Young, pro football player, 24 years old, was cut by the Detroit Lions because of on-field, off-field problems. The Rams picked him up. Not good. Well, he's been arrested now 3 times in the last week, including twice in 1 day. Now, when he was with the Lions, the reason they cut him was because he occasionally would run the wrong route. Titus Young, arrested 3 times, 1 week, twice in 1 day. He was caught on foot by not one but 2 cops. Are you kidding me? No wonder the Lions cut this guy.
He was caught by 2 cops?
Caught by 2 cops by foot. These on
cops,
foot.
Most cops look like the Michelin Tire Man.
Most cops look like me, only not as thin.
Except for the cops I know. They're all very healthy guys. The interesting thing is his dad came out and said Titus has a disorder. I'm not sure what that is other than disorderly conduct most of the time. And actually, DUI, it doesn't matter what it is. He's an equal opportunity lawbreaker. He can break every kind of law you need. Can't catch a pass. And obviously can't outrun police officers, who my guess is the average police officer is not running a 4.440. That's just my guess.
That's my guess as well. And I'm guessing with Titus Young being caught on foot by 2 police officers, my guess would be that he probably ran the wrong route.
He was charged with DUI, attempted burglary, and assaulting a police officer. Quite a week, young man. Quite a week.
Yeah, I mean, from a DUI to breaking and entering to attacking a police officer. Again, I don't really call athletes out for criminal activity because the numbers show. I'm a numbers guy, and the numbers show professional athletes are consistent with the general population. It's anywhere from 5 to 12 to 15%. Whatever that number is, it's consistent whether you are a professional athlete or a regular Joe. The surprising part to me is most professional athletes make more money than the average Joe, and forget the fact that the love of money is at the root of all evil. I've always said the lack of money is at the root of all evil. Desperate people do desperate things, but why would you be desperate, Mr. Professional Athlete?
Well, unless he squandered his fortune somewhere else. I mean, a lot of this goes to people, you know, basketball players or football players who come from low-income families and backgrounds. When they do cash that, they suddenly have their entourage of people. They do their best to take care of their moms and their families. And then they have a lot of hangers-on and a lot of people who take advantage of them, people who do have money, who take advantage of them, whether it's an investment banker who gets them involved in investments they shouldn't be involved in, restaurants and risky ventures, or it's people that suddenly you're trying to take care of 25 people. Instead of taking care of yourself and your immediate family, these guys overextend themselves thinking, Scott, the money's going to always be there when the average life of an NFL player is less than 5 years.
Well, it's not just NFL players. It's athletes in general. And, Brett, I could not agree more with your assessment because it lends itself to the fact that money does not make you rich. Your ideas will make you rich. Mike Tyson was worth well over $300 million, filed bankruptcy. Evander Holyfield made a lot of money, lost everything. So again, money does not make you rich. Your ideas make you rich.
Yeah, I think education's a big factor in a lot of this stuff as well, or lack thereof.
Well, and lack thereof lends itself to our school system. I didn't learn squat in school about money. Financial education is really up to you.
That's a good point, and it should be there. You're right.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard, Brett Grant, I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper. Check out my site, PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, RefPicks, Tim Donahue's site, that's .com as well. This is the part of the show where Brett Grant and I together put money into your pocket as we put you on the right side.
Well, as we alluded to earlier, Scott was a winner, I think, every day now except once in the last 2 weeks. And I got on the right side yesterday, an easy win with the Washington Nationals, even though Bryce Harper ran into that wall. I think there's a new song, you know, George of the Jungle, Bryce of the outfield. Watch out for that wall. And hopefully Bryce Harper, the Las Vegas native, will be all right. But he face-planted himself yesterday into the wall at Dodger Stadium. And hopefully he's going to be okay. But I'm going to go to my game today, which will be the Milwaukee Brewers in Pittsburgh to take on the Pittsburgh Pirates in a spot. This is a play against Kyle Loesch. He's been a hard luck pitcher for the Brewers. He's pitched well at times, but he's not getting the run support. And also he goes against a guy in Jeff Locke who's been pretty good for the Pirates. He's lost his last couple of starts, has Locke. But he beat the Cardinals. He lost a 5-4 decision. He lost a 3-2 decision. He's pitched very well. And getting now plus 104 at home, by the way, now a home underdog at plus 104. I like the Pirates. Kyle Loesch is just 1-4 on the year, a 3.53 ERA, a whip that's not as impressive as a typical Kyle Loesch whip, sitting at about 1.2. He's given up base runners. He's given up runs. And he's not getting run support. And a lot of that has to do with luck. I'm just going to take the Pirates and now get plus 104 at home against the Brewers.
To recap my play from yesterday before we get to today's right side, I like the under in the Bulls contest. I bet it the night before at under 187.5. Yesterday when I came to the studio, it was 187. Brett mentioned, and I saw this last night as well, 6 hours later, all the money came storming in on the under. Sportsbooks had no chance. Again, this is important because you want to be on the move early or against it late. So the sportsbooks do not want to move the number because they open themselves up to get middled. Now, it opened 188. I played under 187.5. I released under 187 on the air. It closed at tip-off 185. Now, it ended up winning and covering by 30 points. Again, like I say, there is a reason why it moved. FTM, follow the money. It's your money. Respect it. Do you want to be on the move early, against it late? Now, everyone was on the under, but why would you lay under 185 if you could have played under 187.5 or even 187? The idea is it's always about value, grinding, scalping, middling, finding opportunity, and pouncing on the sports books. Never feel sorry for the sports books. They couldn't care less about you. Don't ask me how I know. All right.
They don't send you a Christmas card or a birthday card?
They do not. No, they do not. And I'll get into that. Another, are you kidding me? I could make an entire hour per day, are you kidding me, on sportsbook, ticket writers. All right. Let's keep it moving. Right side today, I'm looking at the same game. You are the Milwaukee Brewers on the road taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates. And you talk about the Brewer pitcher being a hard luck pitcher, not getting any run support. And yet you talk about Locke, the lefty for the Pirates. He's been pitching extremely well. His whip, walks, hits per innings pitch, very competitive at 1.21. The Brewer pitcher coming in at 1.20. The over-under for this game is 7.5. I'm 8-1 my last 9 plays. I like the total for this game. I like under 7.5. It's 7.5 flat, meaning it's minus 10 cents, whether you like the over or the under. My money under the 7.5 in the Pittsburgh Pirate Milwaukee Brewer contest. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
All right, so we're on the same game, just different wagers, not against each other like we were last time.
I have a lot of respect for you, Brett, because we're documenting our plays, and I make on average anywhere from 3 to 5 plays per day. So the idea is here that you have stepped up by taking dogs. I mean, I'm a dog player. I love taking pluses, but in the spirit of the show, if we're going to keep track of wins and losses, I'm not going to be taking $2 favorites or $1.50 favorites. I try to keep it around pick minus 10, minus 15, minus 20 cents tops. But you have manned up, and I know on a couple of occasions, taking the Texas Rangers at a plus winner and taking the Chicago White Sox at a plus winner. If you go to VegasInsider.com, you'll see that 80% of my plays are, well, everything is time-stamped and documented, but I'm a dog player. It's really tough, I really believe, to make a living betting favorites, minuses. I only deal in pluses. Now, if we're talking totals, you can put a number on anything. If I'm laying under 7.5 minus 10, something tells me it's going to go to 7.5 minus 15, 20, 25 cents. So Brett Grant, Scott Pritchard, together we are the odds couple, Monday through Friday, KSHP AM 1400 radio, live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. Good luck and goodbye.